Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the podcast. I'm your host, Brian Keane, best-selling author of the book, The Fitness Mindset, and Rewire Your Mindset, here to help you by deconstructing expert guests on all things health, fitness, and mindset. Today's guest takes the conversation in a very different direction to what we've covered in the recent past. Today's episode is with Emily Moores, who is a doctor of human sexuality, a sex therapist who specializes in breaking through taboos online, cultural taboos, misinformation, and awkward sex talks. Today's episode is something that I put up as an Instagram story on a topic that you would like to hear covered. And when it came to talking to a sex expert or a sex therapist, there is nobody more qualified in my mind to talk on this conversation. Emily puts out fantastic content online through her podcast and through her Instagram page, where she breaks down and talks through all the conversations that we normally don't have in public. And today's episode is one of those conversations. We touch on everything here from anxiety during sex to performance issues to the benefits of scheduling sex to how to handle conversations and talk about and bring up sex as a conversation with your partner, how to discuss your fantasies. And we even go down the rabbit holes of masturbation for females, how to potentially discuss anal sex for both genders, for male and female, an interesting one to definitely put to the back burner and think about in terms of erogenous zones that we talk on earlier or later on, apologies, in the podcast. The one thing I'll say here as well, we mentioned a podcast with Logan Ury, who is the author of the book, How Not to Die Alone. And that episode was previously scheduled to go out before this episode with Emily. But because Emily is releasing a live podcast on Thursday, the 15th of April, we are recording this episode on the 6th and releasing it on, I think, what's the 12th? So in the next couple of days. So the original scheduling was supposed to be Logan first and then Emily, but now Logan's episode has been rescheduled to April 26th. That's a great episode on dating and discussing and breaking down her book, How Not to Die Alone. So I actually found Logan through Emily's podcast. So I wanted to bring that up here in case people are searching, in case you're wondering, well, where's that episode about Logan? So without further ado, here is this wide-ranging conversation on all things sex. And for anybody who is looking to improve their sex life, improve the amount of pleasure they're getting in their life through either with a partner or a loved one, or how to bring up awkward conversations that you might not potentially have otherwise. Here is sex therapist Emily Moores on conversations around sex, breaking through taboos, masturbation, and discussing sexual fantasies with your partner. Enjoy. Oh, adult content. So warning, this podcast contains scenes and conversations of an adult nature. Enjoy. Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the podcast. I'm delighted to be joined today with my guest, Emily Moores. Emily is a doctor of human sexuality and the host of the longest running sexual wellness podcast, Sex with Emily. She is also the best-selling author of the book, Hot Sex, Over 200 Things You Can Try Tonight. Emily has helped millions of people around the world navigate their sex lives. Her candid conversations challenge cultural taboos, misinformation, and awkward sex talks to create a future where people can deeply connect and embrace pleasure-filled lives. I'm looking forward to talking all things sex, pleasure, and previously unexplored conversations in today's episode. Emily, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here with you.
Me too, Emily. I've been following your Instagram, as I said, just before we went online for ages. I love your content and the message you put out there for people, breaking down what I think of your content between the podcast and Instagram. It's just challenging all the well-held beliefs and taboos around sex. But before we dive into that, talk a little bit about your backstory into what got you into, you know, getting your doctorate in human sexuality and kind of what's led you on your current path.
Okay. Well, my backstory is probably like a lot of your listeners, even though I grew up in Michigan, you know, Midwest, United States, and I kept getting into relationships and having sex that I thought was okay, you know, not great. And I realized I had zero sex education. I was very much having sex like it was more performative. It was more about like, what does my male partner want? I felt like I wasn't having as much pleasure. I'm also an overachiever. So if anyone said they had amazing sex last night, I'd always say, what do you mean by that? What, you know, what does amazing, and for years I was doing this. I was like, what do you mean by amazing sex? Was his penis double jointed? Were you swinging from the rafters? Did you have 85 orgasms? Like, what does incredible sex mean to you? And I thought, well, I want to get into it and learn how to have great sex. So I started a podcast almost 16 in 2005. It was the first month of podcasting, and I just started interviewing people about their sex life and relationship and dating. And the first thing I realized was that I wasn't alone. A lot of people were really confused about their sex life, or they had been in a long-term relationship and the sex wasn't great. And the one thing everyone had in common was that nobody talked about it. They didn't talk to their partners about it. They didn't talk to their friends about it. It was still really, really taboo. And I knew after that first show that this would be my mission in life, was to get people to prioritize their pleasure and liberate the conversation around sex. And so I've been doing the Sex Only podcast now. I've got thousands of episodes people can listen to, my website, my Instagram, as you mentioned. And I just try to make it sex, talk about sex like we're talking about the weather. There should be no shame in your sex game. And then I went back to school and got my doctorate about 8 years ago in human sexuality. And, you know, I just love helping people, all genders. You know, my audience is split, men, women, all ages. We all need to get this information and learn how to, most importantly, talk about it with ourselves and others.
I love it. And we were talking just before we went on air how your audience is split 50-50. And what I thought was it would have been primarily split female, but I've been following your content for ages and get so much from it. And yet, when as soon as you said it, I'm like, actually, I've had conversations with three or four of my male friends who all follow you as well. So that doesn't surprise me. But you talk a lot about pleasure, and that's kind of the focal point. Talk about how pleasure is our birthright and how we all deserve to have it, because I think that's going to give us a nice little introduction into a lot of the different topics we're going to cover today.
Yeah, well, pleasure is such an interesting concept, because if you think about it, I think that our basic human need is that we all want pleasure. We all do things that make, we all go towards what makes us feel good and away from things that make us feel bad. And, you know, to define pleasure, it's just a feeling of, you know, happy, satisfaction, enjoyment. But what I found is so many of us have a complicated relationship with it as well. So we have something going on in our life, we numb it, right? We think, oh, I'm going to drink a lot, or I'm going to go shopping, or I'm going to do drugs and all these things. Not that everything in moderation, fine, but sometimes we numb out, right? And we think, well, that's going to get me out of my pain. So I really want people to look at pleasure in their life, whether it's sex or whether it's, you know, going for a run or going into nature or going hanging out with friends, and do more of that. Go towards more what makes you feel good and away from what makes you feel bad. And so I just want people to really like take a look at what's made me feel good in the last week. What's made me feel good? I have something actually on my site at sexwithemily.com called the Pleasure Planner. It's a free downloadable guide that people can go through it, and it really helps you. And couples do it together, people do it individually, because when it could be like picking flowers, like I don't even care what pleasure is to you, but when we put more of that in our life and we prioritize it, meaning like I'm going to look at my calendar for the week, what am I doing in my schedule that's going to make me feel good? Because the second part of pleasure is that once we understand it, sometimes we put limits on it, or we put conditions on it. I don't deserve to go out to dinner with friends, or I don't deserve to even have sex or masturbate or make myself feel good until I finish this to-do list, until I finish work, until I don't deserve it. But what I'd like people to flip that on their heads and realize that the more pleasure we actually give ourselves, if we start with pleasure, the better our life is going to feel all around.
I love that. We need to prioritize our pleasure. Emily, I'm curious, as someone that's been following you a long time, and I'm in a relationship now, and I've been following you since I was single, and a long time. I've been following your Instagram page a long time now. Do you have mostly people who are single, or mostly people in a relationship that are following you and communicating with you, or is it a split combination, like your male-female split?
It's kind of a combo. You know, it's funny because we did a survey and it was amazing, Brian. We had 10,000 people answer because we were trying to get our demographic. And it looks like a lot of people, many people are in relationships more so than single. Although I feel like everyone I hear from, a lot of the questions I get at, and people can email me questions or call into the show, and usually they're single. So, but my studies keep, and that's the second survey that says that people are actually, a lot of them are in relationships, however you define that. I don't know if they're married or just dating. So I have to think it just runs the gamut, really, because sometimes you're in a relationship and then you're single again, and people have been listening to me forever. So I actually really make it a point to speak to all, wherever people are at. So whether you're dating or in a relationship, there's always content, I believe, in every episode that is going to speak to you. But we did do a great dating episode recently with a woman named Logan Yuri. It's called How Not to Die Alone. And she talks about how we're all really bad daters. We don't really have the great, and a lot of times just our behavior patterns that we apply to every other area of our life. Like if we have limiting beliefs, or if we are really bad at making decisions, we might bring that into dating. And then I just did a show last week about like the honeymoon phase, how to keep it hot after the honeymoon phase, you know, that feel good part of a new relationship that always is going to end. So I think like I release 2 episodes, 2 to 3 a week. So there's always something there for everyone.
You've given me a perfect segue there, because I actually had Logan on the podcast last week. The episode will be going out the week before this one. But I found her. I found her through yours. It was through your podcast. Yeah.
Okay.
And I reached out directly after. Fantastic, fantastic guest. But you've given me a segue into what I wanted to touch on about keeping the honeymoon vibes alive. And you speak about in that episode that, you know, it takes more than one person to fix a sex life. It has to be a team effort. Can you discuss that a little bit with us?
Sure. Well, what I found is, and this is probably by the time people get to me, but they say it's always one person. Like, I've tried to talk to my partner and, you know, they won't talk about it. Or they'll say, I really want to do something sexy for my partner. I want to spice it up. I want to be better in bed. And it's like, that's great to have that intention. But it's a team effort. And I hear time and time again, my partner won't talk about sex. They won't make an effort. They won't work on it. And it's like, you can't do all the heavy lifting yourself. There has to be two people to make a healthy, satisfying sexual relationship. And so if you're with a partner who refuses to work on it and refuses to talk about it, I think you have a sign. I think you have your answer. It's like, if your partner says, I won't go to therapy, or I won't even talk to you about these things, how are you going to grow in other areas? So, you know, how can one, that's the whole thing. It's like, you don't have to be the savior in every part of your relationship. It's okay to get information from me, of course, and call in. And I do that all the time. But I'm talking about like, if a partner is resistant, it's just not going to work. You both have to be interested in your sex life. Like, how can we, you know, a lot of couples need to plan sex, which is great, like schedule sex, or they get bored. So how can we try something new? But if you're banging your head against a wall and your partner's like, I don't care, I don't want to do it. And I hear this from all genders. It's not just the men, not just the women. There's always, it seems like in many relationships, there's one person that just is uncomfortable. And I have to give, my heart goes out to them, because even the people who don't want to talk about it is because they don't have experience. They feel like, if my partner's coming to me with a sexual problem, I am a bad person. They don't like my penis. They don't like my body. I'm doing something wrong. Rather than saying, okay, it's just that this is a new conversation to have. Like, we don't get mad at our partners. They're like, we should try a new restaurant. We always go to that neighborhood place. We're like, great, let's find a place. But with sex, we automatically feel like we're on the defensive. And so I really talk a lot about how to have healthy conversations about sex so your partner will be on board with you and not run away.
Why do you think we go on the defensive when it comes to conversations around sex?
Because we don't have great examples of people talking about sex. Our parents didn't talk about it. We didn't talk about it in school. And since there's a dearth of information and it's not a familiar topic, if someone does bring it up, well, first off, we're usually thinking that we're failing at sex anyway, or we're not that great, or we don't know what we're doing, or we always kind of compare ourselves because we don't talk. Not all of us, but we go in periods. So if somebody brings it up, you automatically think, oh, I did something wrong. Like if someone said to me, let me talk to you about your driving, I would say, oh shit, did you see me parking? Like, did you see me pull into the driveway in a weird place? Was I speeding? No one ever talks to you about my driving, right? Unless I get pulled over. So I'm going to think I messed up. The same thing goes for our sex life. So one of my top tips is to say, if you're in a relationship, to find a location where you are not in the bedroom, not just after you had sex and you're frustrated again. It's when you're hanging out and you say, you know what? I realize that I love our relationship and it's been so great lately and all these things, but I realize there's one thing we've never talked about, and I've never even talked about it with anyone, is our sex life. And I know this is awkward. It might be awkward for you, awkward for me, but I've learned, I would say, blame me. I've been listening to Sex with Emily, and she says that if we talk about it, it's really going to help us both have the most pleasure. Imagine if our sex life could be better. Like, I already love these three things about it, and then name the things so your partner knows that you love them and you like the sex you're having. Say, but I was thinking we could go on her site and download this yes, no, maybe list, which is a list that gives people like 100 options of things to try, from like kissing more to cuddling to spanking, just like everything you can imagine and some things you can't. So I give people tools to have healthy conversations. and so they can expand their sexual pleasure and their relationship.
Yeah, there's so many tools on between the podcast and Instagram and the book, Hot Sex. It's literally over 200 things you can try tonight is the title. I'm curious, as you know, there's tens of thousands of people who have read that over the years. What's the one or two things that gets quoted back to you the most from the book?
I would say the variation of the variety of positions. And it has really great. And the thing is, it's only available now in a digital version because it's totally out of print. And I'm writing a new book. But you can get it at Amazon, the digital, you can download it. And I think that people like that I took actual photographs of people having sex, but then we digitized it. So it's just really cool, like drawings, animation people. So it's like not like, I don't know, it's like really easy to look at. It's really easy to understand varieties because there aren't that many sex positions. I mean, there's like missionary or doggy style. And it just shows you like by adding a pillow or, you know, the different varieties of the same position and different ways to do it. So, and I think that people like that it's, you can turn to any page. It's really accessible. It also starts with like flirting and teasing and like it builds up to like threesomes, you know, so it kind of covers everything in like a beautiful guide.
I'm going to potentially double back into the threesome topic more so because I really enjoyed that Instagram. I think it's a reel or an IGTV. It was on your Instagram. So I'm going to park that for now and definitely come back into it. But one of the things I wanted to touch on there, because you mentioned it earlier, was scheduling sex. And I know this really split your audience when you posted it because some people were like, no, that's terrible. And other people were like, that's a great idea. What if you prioritize it and schedule it, it gets done. Talk about the benefits of scheduling sex.
Okay. Well, here's the thing is that a lot of people think scheduling sex is the least sexy thing that we could do. If I have to look at my calendar and it says, go to the gym, have my Skype call, I have my Zoom call and have sex, it's not sexy. It's not hot. It's not spontaneous. And I don't want that. I don't want to do it. It just seems like it's another task. But what I want to say is the reason why couples usually get to the point of scheduling sex is because we are so busy. Everything else comes first. And then weeks go by and or days go by and we're not having the sex we want. So the cool thing about scheduling is it takes all that, you know, worry out or like it's not going to happen. Usually there's a high desire partner in every relationship and a lower desire partner. And so typically the lower desire partner holds the power because they're the one deciding whether you're having sex or not. So then if they, let's say the higher desire is trying to constantly have sex with the lower desire, and then they constantly feel rejected, right? So then they come home from work and like, oh God, I'm going to be rejected again. But if you know Saturday night is our night, we're having sex, we're going to have a date night, and it's happening, then you can both look forward to it. You can start thinking about it and talking about it. Know that you're prepared for it. Get yourself in the mood for sex. You know, I often tell, you know, masturbate, get in your body, talk about things you want to try. Try it in a different room of the house. Buy a sex toy, buy some lube, do something different. And then it's just like a planned event. Like I have a vacation planned finally, and I'm really freaking excited for it and I can look forward to it. Now, I could have done a spontaneous trip and it would have been great, but the fact that I can plan for it and pack and think about it makes it that much more exciting. So it's really just flipping it on its head and thinking differently about scheduling sex.
I just think it's so valuable for people just to rewire the way they see that, as you said, because in very few relationships, from personal experience alongside conversations with friends and family members, you will always have, for the most part, a higher desire and a lower desire partner. It's just, you know, the kind of the nature of the beast. And that is one beautiful way to fix that for people listening who are in that position. You spoke recently on your Instagram about anxiety during sex, and This one triggered for me a little bit, because I remember, particularly in my early days, kind of late teens, early 20s, I would have a lot of anxiety around sex, particularly the thoughts before, during the performance, all of it. And when I was talking to a few of my female friends in preparation for this conversation, they were like, oh my God, it was so bad for me as well. And I said, this is definitely a topic I want to touch on. And I know you brought it up on your Instagram recently in the last few weeks. Talk about how to deal with anxiety during sex or anxiety around sex.
Yeah, it's a great question. I talk about it a lot in the podcast and on the Instagram and Facebook and all the places because, well, a lot of us are just in our head during sex. And all we're doing is we are stressing out. We're in our head. We have our to-do list in our mind. We're thinking that we're not enough, that my partner is going to know I gained weight or that I'm not doing this thing right or something's wrong with something in my body. And am I going to orgasm? You know, all the things. And the second we get into our head, just think of it this way. when your blood is rushing to your head, it's rushing away from your genitals. So if you find yourself in your head and you're worrying, you know, do a few practices that I mentioned are, the first one is to focus on your senses. Ground yourself in what's happening in the moment. So when you bring in senses into the bedroom or wherever you're actually, even if you just have anxiety when you're driving in the car, but let's talk about the bedroom for a minute. You can think, what am I smelling? Okay, I'm smelling that candle. It smells so good. What am I touching? I'm touching my partner's body. How do my hands feel on their body? What am I tasting? You know, my partner's lips. What am I hearing? That playlist. And this, you can't be in anxiety worrying about the future or the past when you are grounded in your senses. It immediately has this incredible, experience of landing you in the present moment. So that's a great anchor. Just think like, I'm going to think, even if you only get to three of the senses, it might work for you. So that's one thing to do. So you can, and you have, might have to do that a few times, but then you'll realize, oh, I'm present. I'm here. I can't do anything about my to-do list. My partner's with me because they love me. They respect me. They want to be here, and keep bringing yourself back. The second thing is our breath. Our breath is an incredible anchor when we are anxious and we're worried. So taking a really deep breath, like your inhale, like your exhale is a little bit longer than your inhale, but maybe you count to three and you release for four and you just sort of calm yourself through your breath. It also helps to move stale like energy through your body. So if it also helps to facilitate orgasm too. Breath is an incredible tool for sex. So breathing really deeply, grounding yourself with your partner. And the other thing is, it's also great to breathe with your partner before you start sex. Just sit there and look at each other and just say, let's ground. You know, let's have a moment here where we can like kind of get on the same page. And another thing to do is to kind of play with, you know, your senses again in this way, like you put a blindfold on during sex, right? If you blindfold your partner, everything else becomes more heightened around it, your sense of taste, sense of touch. And you could play with that too, because when you interact, like a lot of people like, you know, dominant submissive play or dirty talk or different things like that. When you are engaging in your partner in an activity during sex, you also can't be bogged down with anxiety and worry and limiting thoughts.
Do you find from your experience, Emily, and the reason I asked this question is just I'm talking a focal group of maybe five people. Is it more men or women that suffer from anxiety around sex from your experience?
But I would say that it's split. I would say it's just like if you experience anxiety in your life, you probably will experience anxiety in the bedroom. Maybe our worries are a little bit different, you know, kind of like we all worry about our body parts or if we're performing. But I would say that it's equal opportunity. We're all anxious in the bedroom from time to time, and that's okay. I mean, we get anxious in our life. We're going to get anxious in the bedroom. But I think we have to also make friends with our anxiety and be like, okay, well, there's my anxiety again. Let me breathe deeply. Don't like the key to getting out of negative thoughts and limiting beliefs is by catching it and saying, there you go again. Like you could be like, not, you know, go away, or have an anchoring thought. Like, I want to feel pleasure in my body right now. I want to feel in my body, and just have something that you can go back to and use that tool throughout your day in every area of your life.
You mentioned there self-conscious about your body, and one of my favorite lines from you, and I think it was potentially from the Lewis Howes podcast, but it's a quote I got that I've heard you say, and I wrote it down in preparation for the podcast. It was, when we heal ourselves sexually, we heal so many other parts of our life. Can you explain this to us?
Yeah, I think that we often think that sex is something that is, it's like an outlier, right? We care about our health, our physical health, our mental health, our nutrition, our spirituality. But if you think about it, sex is sort of like the bastard child of the wellness industry. But I mean, I feel like that's changing right now. But when we are sexually healthy, what I mean by that is we clear, if we've been, you know, if we've had sexual assault, we've had sexual abuse, which like 3 out of 5 women have, or 3 out of 6, and we haven't dealt with that. You know, we haven't gone to therapy. We haven't worked it through. If we have low self-esteem or body image challenges, or we're faking orgasm, you know, we have to heal all of the underlying roadblocks that are keeping us from having sex. If we're on a certain medication, it's going to keep us from having orgasms, perhaps, or having pleasure. It's like, it's part of it. And then once we start to heal all of these things, or even if it's just figuring out how to talk to our partner about sex, and we're constantly not satisfied with our sex life, that's going to impact every other area of your life. Because when we feel satisfied and we're in a healthy sexual relationship, it boosts our immune system. You know, orgasms boost our serotonin, our dopamine. There's all these feel-good hormones that will spill into other areas of our life. But when it's like this thing that we're like, oh God, sex, it's just confusing and hard and weird, and I'm just going to fake it, and I'm, you know, it's, you don't realize it, but that is going to have an impact in every other area of your life, you know, from the bedroom to the boardroom.
With the physiological benefits, obviously, of orgasm, discuss faking orgasms. Because I know this is something that your content is fantastic at. I know the two things that I love, and I think that as a kind of a male audience follower, two that I think is very important for people, again, as someone that probably shouldn't deserve a say in this is by being a male person, but, you know, faking orgasms and masturbation for females, they're two things that you touch on that I think are so important to talk about. So before we jump into masturbation for females, talk about faking orgasms.
The majority of women have admitted to faking an orgasm at some point in their life. I'm telling you, that's it. Most women have. I don't think I've ever been with a group of women who never, like, there's, like, even if it was once, we've all done it. And the reason why is because a lot of women don't really understand our bodies and how to have an orgasm. Maybe we've never had them. I think 20 to 30% of women have never had one. And so that's one reason that we just, and the way we think about sex is often about penetration. Like, we define sex, and I'm talking about heterosexual relationships here. Penis goes into vagina, and that is the definition of sex. The problem with that is only 20% of women will have an orgasm during penetration. 20%. And of those women, it's not every single time. So since we often, and how women will orgasm, and this is proven in studies time and time again, it's through oral sex, kissing, and touch with a finger or a toy. And so if most sex is just going to go to penetration without a warm-up, without oral sex, without kissing and slowing down and whatever your partner needs, orgasms aren't going to happen. So women get into situations where we're having sex and our partner's, you know, pounding away or whatever's happening, and we're just like, oh God, is this going to end? It doesn't feel great, and I'm just going to fake it because I want my partner to feel good. My pleasure isn't important right now, and, you know, let's just move on. And if we could learn how to talk to our partners, because I always say your partner wants to be a great lover to you, right, Brian? Like, you want your partner to feel great. Like, you would do anything probably to make her feel amazing and have an orgasm and just, like, feel safe and feel good. But they don't know either. Like, this is, and I think why you might probably like myself is my episodes and my Instagram, because I never knock men. My heart, again, we are all in this together. We did not have accurate information. Everything since the beginning of time talks about procreation and penetration, and that is sex. It's all we see in movies and in porn. And so it's like we just don't have the information. So that's, I'm all about, like, let's just talk about it. And so one tip for women is to, my biggest tip is that the most important thing is that women need to learn our own bodies. We have to become experts in our own pleasure and our own bodies. And that starts with masturbation. And it starts, and if you have shame around masturbation, when we talk about sexual health and wellness, like, let's clear that up. Is that coming from a religious household where it was shamed? Is it coming from religion where it was shamed and it wasn't okay? Did someone once tell you that it was wrong to do it? You know, even if it was once and we were 5 years old or 10 years old, it doesn't mean that we can be a 25-year-old woman and all of a sudden feel good about it. So getting to know your own body and what feels good, whether it's like with a vibrator, I'm a huge fan of toys. I talk about that a lot. Using lube. Lube is a great way to help women have more orgasms. It's not just like, you know, most women are not always wet. Even if we're turned on, it fluctuates throughout our cycles. So there's just a lot of tips that I give women to, like, get into your own body and then become an expert of your pleasure. And then, you know, you can start to show your partner, hey, look what I learned. I learned this really cool thing about my body, and here's how I'd love you to touch it, and here's what we could do, and here's what would feel good to me, you know? So women are going to orgasm through more clitoral stimulation, and penetration just doesn't always do that. So if you need to use a finger or use a toy or get really warmed up, you know, again, this is just information that I just want it to be available to everybody, which it is. If you check out, you know, what I create at Sex with Emily, it'll help them. So it's just really a lot of misunderstanding and misinformation.
One of the things I've always been very curious about as a guy is that we tend to talk about masturbation a lot more openly than females do, which is funny because guys tend to not talk about their feelings, emotions, sex, things like that without, you know, you get the sugar-coated tip. You very rarely get the details. But when it comes to masturbation, it's something that we've joked about and talk about since 12, 13, 14, and it continues through the adult life. But that doesn't seem to be the case with females. I know you're breaking that down with your content, but why do you think women don't discuss it as much?
Because again, we see it in movies, right? It's always okay for men to masturbate. We see it in movies, or our brothers are talking about it, or our cousins, and we're like, oh God, men masturbate. But where do we see female masturbation glorified? We really don't. And women often don't talk. I always say to women, be that friend in your friend group. Be the one who starts to talk about it and say, do you masturbate? What do you do? What feels good to you? And so I just don't think it's glorified. It's like, or women feel like, oh, is it going to make me slutty, or am I going to be judged for it? Or often I hear them say, well, I don't need it because I have a partner. And it's like, no, you are actually learning your body. You know, there's so many erogenous zones on our body, like our nipples, our inner thighs, like figure it out. You can mutual masturbation, do it with your partner where you're touching yourself and your partner's pleasing themselves. And then you get to like, it's really hot to watch your partner, but it also, you're also learning. So it's like a twofer because you're like, oh, that's really hot, and oh, I didn't realize that you put your hand there, you move this way. And so, you know, I just think again, this is all about not seeing examples about it, not, and it's in shame. A lot of what I talk about is like, let's leave this, let's deal with our shame. Yeah. Get vulnerable and release it.
I love that. I think it's so important. And it's one of, as I said, one of my favorite things that you discuss. And again, because it's not content I cover on my channels or my page, more so because we touch on other topics and I don't have the authority in that realm like you do. So I love that you speak about it. I'm going to pivot out of that a little bit. And I'm curious because you have discussed this on your podcast and on Instagram. And I know there's a lot of people who are listening to this who probably are well past the point of having lost their virginity. But if you could go back to before you had sex, what's something that you wish you had known before? In order, whatever that is, whether it's something to do with the mindset around it, something to do with the physical side around it. What's something that you wish you had known before you had sex?
Oh, gosh. I wish I knew that. I mean, everything I'm talking about, I didn't masturbate until I was like 25. I didn't even know about it. Didn't even occur to me. And I like grew up in a liberal home, but there was not a lot of information around it. I used to fake orgasms too, by the way, through my 20s. I always faked orgasms. So I would probably say I would ground in my pleasure. I would have touched myself more and I would have communicated and I would have not done anything I didn't want to do. I wouldn't have, you know, like having sex when I didn't want to. I would have told myself that I, you know, not to be so performative, you know, just doing stuff to please a partner. Like, how can I look better having sex? But it doesn't mean I feel great, right? Because porn show, like people, a lot of people like have sex like they see in porn because it's the only place to look at sex and it's not accurate. I mean, sure, there's some positions that are real. People are really doing stuff, but it's not a blueprint for how you should be having sex. You got to figure that out on your own.
What's the biggest sexual misconception you see online?
I mean, I would say I've touched on it. I think it's about, gosh, online or is in porn? I would say that it's about centering on penetration and not on pleasure and oral, like all the other things. Like I actually want to ban the word foreplay because it takes the word, I'm trying to like rename it literally because it's like, it's part of sex. You can just have foreplay or just make out or just have oral sex. I mean, yes, penetration feels, and I'm not saying penetration doesn't feel great. It's just, I would think that's a big misconception that sex is the end all be all when sex, penetration is the end all be all when there's just so many other ways to feel good.
With that in mind, Emily, what's the biggest thing you've changed your mind about in recent years around sex?
I'm trying to think what I've learned. I'm always learning. I would say it's more about misconception. I think, honestly, the birth control pill. I think there's been a lot of information the last few years about the birth control pill and how, and I'm not telling everyone to go off of it, talk to your doctor, but I think that it's really been harmful for a lot of women. It impacts their sex drive. It impacts their ability to have orgasms, their ability to conceive, fertility. And I would say that I've done some great episodes on this topic, actually, with a woman named Alisa Vitti, V-I-T-T-I. If you look at those, she wrote a book called Flow Living. And then also I did one with Ricky Lake. I would say that's it. Like women, just, I would say there's a lot of misconceptions about women's arousal and desire and what turns us on and things that are impacting our sex drive. So I would say that.
I want to come back. We touched on threesomes earlier, and I think that, again, this is a conversation that some people are going to gravitate instantly towards. Other people will probably have it written off already, and there's probably everything in between. But talk about the three things that you need to ask before you potentially enter into a threesome.
There's so many tips. I would say that it's so first off, well, this is, I can just tell you. Communicate with your partner. You're not going to get them to have a threesome. Do they think it's hot? Do they want to have a threesome? You're not going to talk them into it. The next thing is like set your boundaries and your rules around it. Are you going to like, who's the person? Who are you both attracted to? Like, what are you guys into? You know, you don't have to, it's like, yeah, you have to agree together on the boundaries and set limits. Like there's a lot of talking that has to go into having a threesome. You don't just do it to spice up your relationship. And the other thing I think I also talked about was like aftercare with a threesome. Like, are you going to, you know, what are you going to do? Like, talk about it afterwards and make sure that it's, you know, some people have to say like, oh, I don't want to have sex with anybody that we know. I don't want to have sex with anybody that's our, that's our friend, our neighbor. So really just about communication. You're not going to talk about fantasies first. Like, what are you into? Because I think it's often like the question I ask about threesomes is, how do I get my partner to? And you're just not. Like, they're going to be like, oh, you just want to sleep with my best friend, or what's up with it? So go slow. Dirty talk having a threesome. Be like, hey, right now I'm picturing someone having a threesome. But move slow through it. Communicate. Set boundaries. Yeah.
I'm going to pull out on that because it touches on the same topic of fantasies. And I think threesome, as I said, is one of those things that some people instantly are like, I would love that. Other people are on the other side where it's like, nope, that's a no-go, boundaries, just a no interest in that. And then everything in between. But fantasies more generally is something that people have a wide spectrum of in terms of what does it for them. How would you recommend, and I know we've touched on bringing up sex in conversation with a partner, you know, not doing it in the bedroom and having a kind of a safe place and saying, you know what, you know what would be amazing, or whatever way you want to bring it up. But how would you go about discussing fantasies with a partner?
I would say that it's the same kind of thing with my timing, turf, and tone conversation. Like, the timing is when you guys are in a good place and you're hanging out. It's the turf is outside the bedroom, and your tone is light and curious. So you say to your partner, I love the sex we're having. This has been great. I'd love to talk about fantasies. Like, what do you fantasize about? Let's each write down three fantasies we have and swap the list. Let's each share one thing that we want to try. Because let me tell you, there's two kinds of fantasies. There's the fantasies that we want to happen, that we actually like really want to happen. And then there's the ones we just want to think about when we're masturbating or whatever. And those, that they're all great. You know, having a healthy fantasy life is also part of being sexually healthy. No shame in fantasies. But when you're talking to your partner about it, there's some ways that I explain talking about it. And it's like the who, what, when, where, like who's the fantasy, you know, what's in it, when would you like to do it, where did it come from? You know, you could say, I've had this fantasy, this one time I saw this thing, and here's why. Like, give your partner the details of it, and then say, and I just did an episode on this, I believe, which is probably what you're referring to, but I talk about like how to actually have that conversation with a partner, and then just say, and it's really something that I would love to share with you. I think of you in this fantasy, and I think it would be really hot for you to, you know, think about how your partner could be incorporated in it, rather than just saying like, here's my fantasy, I want to have a threesome with this person, come with me. You know, your partner wants to feel a part of it as well. So really it's just listening and talking and asking questions, and then thanking them for listening and saying, thank you for listening to my fantasy. You know, I love our sex life. I just, you know, and then just really like, you know, be kind to each other and listen and try to like take off the jealousy and all the worry you might have around it, because it's really couples who can have explore each other's fantasies actually, you know, tend to have much more satisfying sex lives.
This might be a chicken or egg question, but I'll ask it anyways. Do you think it's more important to get clear on your boundaries before you talk with your partner about potential fantasies, or having good communication with your partner? Or is it very much a chicken or egg conversation where you need to have both?
I think you have to have both. I think it starts with communication. I think if you start off with somebody and you're just like, how was sex last night? Or is something you've been wanting or something you desire, then it's not such a weird thing to bring up your fantasies or to bring up anything. Like, God, I realize you've been having sex a lot in the bedroom lately. You know, because if think about it, if you talk about sex like when you're planning your next vacation or where you're going to go for dinner, then it's never awkward. It just takes practice. Because then you could say, oh, you know, I was thinking about that. I had this really hot fantasy day when I was driving. And let me tell you about it. And then it's like fun. Then your partner's on board. Like, oh, wow, that's so cool. You know, and then you're not threatened by it. I think we get so threatened by our partner's fantasies sometimes that we just, like I said, going back to what we earlier talked about, is that it's just because it's not normal yet. It still is taboo. We still feel bad about it. So if we're able to just start communicating about our sex life on the easy things, like how did you feel about that? Or what else could I do in the bedroom? You know, and just paying attention, then it'll be easier to bring up things like fantasies and what you want to try, trying new things.
What's something that you wish people asked you more? And I know that sounds like a little bit of a loaded question, but as somebody that works with a lot of people in, say, health and fitness, there's conversations that I have regularly about, you know, what food should I eat? How should I train? What should I do X, Y, and Z with my calories? And there's questions that I'm like, well, I wish people asked this more. You know, how do I fix my mindset so that I can have a better relationship with food? For example, from my area of expertise, when it comes to you, Emily, what's something that you wish people asked you more?
I wish people asked me more about their own. Oh, God, people ask me everything. But I would say that for everybody, a sex question, what it's not that we focus so much on our partners and sometimes we don't want to look at ourselves. So it is mindset. It's how's your mental health? Take responsibility for your own pleasure. We're all responsible for our own orgasms. We're all responsible for our own pleasure. Put your mask on first, you know, literally. But think about, I think if it's, we can center things more on our part in a relationship or our part in our sex life, it's such a great place to start, because when we heal ourselves, we can heal the world.
And what's the biggest sexual taboo amongst people you deal with in terms of the questions that get asked? What's the most frequently asked or kind of hush-hush question that comes into you repeatedly?
Oh, my God. Hush-hush. Let's think. Nothing. I mean, gosh, people ask me about everything. A lot of people ask about anal. I guess anal sex is still really taboo in some parts, although I have to say after all these years, it's definitely becoming a little bit more mainstream. So I think that, and also straight men being curious about anal sex, because it's for men, they have a prostate. It can feel amazing. It doesn't mean you're gay. It doesn't mean you're weird. It just means that you have this incredible body part that might feel great if it's stimulated, right? So I think that there's a lot of those questions, and I don't think they're taboo at all. I don't. I just think it's part of exploration and pleasure.
And would the advice, if somebody wanted to go down the route of, say, anal sex, either anal penetration for men or for women, or, you know, assuming heterosexual, I know I've got people from multiple sexual preferences listening to the podcast, but would you say the conversation is similar in terms of the time turf and working through that? Or would you say it's different in terms of how to handle the conversation?
Oh, that's a great question. I mean, I think that, yeah, and I talk to people of all sexual orientations and genders too, because I really just address people's body parts often. I'm just like, well, if you have an anus, if you have a penis, if you have a vagina, vulva. But I would say that, I mean, you could try in the moment, like putting your finger, you know, kind of like kind of putting it near your partner's, you know, in it, like the opening, and you can just kind of start to tap it and see if they pull back or how they feel about it. You know, you never want to just go from zero to anal. Like, you don't just want to go right into penetration. So you could explore, and if they see how they react to it, they might pull away, you know? And so, but I think if you're having these healthy conversations, which hopefully, Brian, thanks for having me on your show, everybody will now have them with their partner. They could say to them, is there anything you've been wanting to try? You know, oh, I always thought it'd be fun to explore anal. I've never done it. Maybe we could start with, and I always tell people, start with a finger. Start with exploring outside. You know, you don't have to, like, just see if it feels good. You can also check it out during masturbation. Like, how does it feel? So, you know, that's what I recommend.
I love it. Emily, I've only got a couple of more questions for you, but I want to dive in as somebody that I know your content covers such a wide range of things. You know, we've only touched on some of them. So everybody that's listening, I highly recommend go and listen to the podcast, follow your Instagram page, and it'll open up that dialogue with a partner or a potential partner, or even if you're single, around your own sexuality and masturbation, exploring your body, especially for females, because I think it's something that's not discussed enough. But what resources do you use to educate yourself, or what ones have had the most positive impact on you? Is there any books that you recommend? Is there any other podcasts that you tend to listen to, or is it all just conversations with your audience that tend to mold your view and the content that you create, or what does that look like?
Oh my God, I'm always reading, I'm always learning, I'm always taking classes, I'm never ever done. So I would say, what are some great books that I love? I actually just did a post on this with some of my people. Can just go to my website at sexwithemily.com, and I have like my, I just gave my team like my top reading list of places to go. But there's like, there's a book that I just had a woman on my show, this episode's on, it's called Sheology is the name of her book, and it's for women, and it's all about their like sexual health and wellness, their vagina, their like, it's literally about all the questions that they have. I would say that I also love, let's see, what books are great for couples? Let's see. I love the book. What else? Oh, there's a book. It depends how you learn. Untrue by Wednesday Martin is a great book about like women are inherently, she talks about like women are inherently damaged. Like basically it's like her book starts out that everything that you know about sex is untrue. I love the book, The Ethical Slut by Dossie Eason and Janet Hardy. They talk about, you know, how monogamy isn't for everybody. And it's a great roadmap if you want to explore different kinds of relationships. Come As You Are by Emily Nagoski is a great book for women. She Comes First is a great book by Ian Kerner for men. She Comes First is literally about like how to please your partner, how to understand women's bodies. But if people go to my book, my website, sexwithemily.com, they can see I have a few posts with all my like top reading choices.
And I'll link those in the show notes for everybody listening as well, so you can click straight through and check those out. I think there's some great recommendations there, some that I've covered myself and other guests have actually recommended in the past. The Ethical Slut, I had a female on, Whitney Miller, talking about open relationships, and that was one of her book recommendations that she said anyone that wants to experiment with that area should consider. One of the last two questions that I want to ask you, Emily, you have a big Instagram audience. You have a huge podcast, and between your message across different podcasts and different platforms, you're getting that sexual taboo, bringing it down post by post and conversation by conversation. But if you had access to everybody on Instagram and you could put up one post that everybody who's sexually active could see, what would you write in that post for everyone to see?
Oh my God. I would say communication is a lubrication. Talk about sex. Communicate.
I love that. That is such a fantastic line. Communication is lubrication.
I want to buy billboards and say that. Yeah.
Yeah, I have nothing to add to that. I think that's fantastic. Emily, final question, and I can't thank you enough for your time. As I said, I was looking forward to this conversation so much since we set it up. And I know you're doing so much now between the content you're putting out and everything. You know, I know things in LA are a little bit better at the minute in terms of lockdown, the pandemic, etc. So you might not have the same restrictions as we have here in Ireland and the UK. But what's the single most biggest thing that you're the most excited about at the minute?
In the minute? Oh, about work or life?
In general, whichever direction you want to take it.
Well, I'm excited to go on vacation. I'm going on a bike trip in Utah. And the other thing I'm excited about is in April 15th, I'm doing a live virtual podcast. So people anywhere in the world can join me. And it's like people can ask questions live, and there's video if they want to be on video. And we're doing giveaways. It's going to be really fun. So I'm actually really excited about that because I can reach such a wider audience and people can get their questions answered live, because I was supposed to be on tour this year doing live podcasts, but now I won't be able to do it yet. So we'll just do it virtually. And that's, you can find all that on my site as well. It's called Looped Live is the name of the show.
Will you be saving that so people can go back and see it after the virtual, after you do it live?
If they save it, no, I won't be able to save it, but we'll be doing them again more regularly.
Fantastic. I love that. Emily, I can't thank you enough for your time. Can you tell everybody listening where's the best place for them to connect with you? Is it through Instagram? Is it listening to the podcast? Is it the website? Any links or anywhere you want to send people to now, please give those.
Yes. Okay. So everything's at sexwithemily.com. All of my social media is Sex with Emily. If you have a question you want answered, you can email me feedback@sexwithemily.com, or you can go to sexwithemily.com/askemily. There's a form there. And so, and yeah, I released, you know, subscribe to my podcast. I have so many you can listen to from, you know, years, and they're all, you know, pretty evergreen, great topics. And yeah, check out Instagram, all the things. Find me anywhere. I'm everywhere.
And I will link those in the show notes. Just very quickly before you go, Emily, I have to say, I'm one of the old school calendar writers, so I have calendar apps and my assistants use that, but I have in my diary beside me, Sex with Emily for 7 p.m. and I had to put under it in brackets podcast, because my missus came in and she's like, who's Emily? She's like, have you scheduled to have sex with Emily? I'm like, no, podcast. So just a little bit of a side note, just to help people remember that that's where they can find you online. So I had a very awkward conversation around it. I was like, no, podcast. I'm not scheduled in to have sex with Emily or a person named Emily at 7 o'clock on Tuesday. Emily, can't thank you enough for everything you do. Keep spreading the amazing message and just putting it out there for people, because it's breaking down the misconceptions. It's breaking down the taboo. And as you said, it's making and bringing sexual wellness to the forefront of people's minds. So thank you so much for what you do, and thank you so much again for your time.
Thank you for having me, Brian. I appreciate it.
So there you have it, sex therapist Emily Moore's on conversations around sex, breaking through taboos, masturbation, and discussing sexual fantasies with your partner. Very different conversation today, a topic that I was looking forward to talking about as somebody that hasn't previously touched or covered this in any podcast. So I'm really curious to let me know what you thought. Again, we cover a lot of health, we cover a lot of fitness, a lot of wellness on this podcast, but this is a topic that generally doesn't get discussed that often. And I wanted to touch on it just because I think what Emily is doing is she's bringing awareness around conversations that would probably benefit people's lives if they were more open about it. So hopefully this podcast goes some way towards doing that, if you're somebody that will get benefit from it by having those conversations in your own life. So let me know, hit me up on Instagram, be sure to tag me, tag Emily, Sex with Emily on Instagram. Let me know what you thought. And that's everything from this week's episode. Catch you all next Monday.